forever. Dog.
I love iced coffee.
Yeah, iced coffee. That's the good stuff. Dunkin'.
Dunk it into my veins.
America runs on Dunkin', from what I've been told.
America has a dunk tank.
America runs on dunk tank. And speaking of dunk tanks, first of all,
we'd like to announce, welcome
to Double Threat. We could start off Double Threat. Tom, Julie, the rest
Brett,
of the gang.
To some extent.
Thank you. Great to be here today.
Oh my God. He's been doing this. His last three shows, he makes these acceptance speeches and it interrupts things.
Yeah.
Thrill of a lifetime.
He didn't win the Mark Twain Award. And by the way, why does Mark Twain have his own award? Best painting the fence? Cause that guy made it look fun.
Yeah. Best tricking another kid to paint a fence. Award goes to Steve Martin.
Mark Twain.
Really? Steve Martin won the best painting offense looks fun award. It was a big thing. He wore that
rainbow necklace they gave you.
He had a rainbow necklace. He had a headband, and his banjo got in the paint. Unfortunately, there's paint all over his banjo. But Brett Boehm.
Yes.
I went to the Renaissance Fair, speaking of dunk tanks.
Without me?
Yeah, well, get ready for this, okay, guy. Went there, I'm having a great time. A listener comes up to me, a Double Threat fan, says, Tom, how are you? I said, great. This is her name was Jody. She's very nice. Then she says to me the following, get ready for this, Julie. Klausner
I'm ready.
Dies. She says, I invited you guys to the Renaissance Fair. I was like, you did? She was like, yeah, I emailed Brent, and she was calling him Brent in a very
Jody
mocking way. She knows it's Brett. She's a super fan. She says, I invited you all to the Renaissance Fair. I could get you in. But Brent never replied to my email.
What?
Well, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you what. Look, and this is just a testament
to...
When was this?
This was recently?
This was Saturday. Julie Klausner dies.
And that's a reference to Julie's tie-dye company for anybody who's not... just want to clarify.
I'm not asking for no plugs.
No, I don't.
I want to hear this story.
I just want to make sure that maybe new listeners understand that Tom is not making some sort of like coded threats against you.
Oh, like
anything.
Ominous premonitions.
Yes, right. Yeah, that's Julie's incredible tie-dye company. Look it up. That's a URL. And speaking of URLs, this is the reason.
And it's also DYES, just so people know, because Julie has an outstanding clothing line of ice-dyed garments. Whether for your pet or for yourself or for your significant other, if you're in the market for an ice-dyed shirt, there's only one place you go, and that's Julie Klausner Dies. Is that fair to say?
Thank you.
Of course.
It's Renaissance fair to say.
It's this is going to be Renaissance unfair.
Well, here's
what
I'm
about to hear.
Here's what I'm going to tell you is that most institutions, and we'll call Double Threat an institution,
mm-hmm.
you know, they've
got to be. I feel like I'm in one.
they've got one, they've got, you know, like a P.O. box, or they've got a mail, they've got one place that things go to, that inquiries and suggestions and yeah. things go to. Yeah. This Double Threat somehow has, I think, about 10 different places that, that mm-hmm. people send stuff to. They send it to the email, it's doublethreatpod@gmail.com. They send it to, they DM me on social. Sometimes they DM me personally with Double Threat Business, and that's Instagram, that's Twitter. There is so many different ways that people get in touch with us, and sometimes I get overwhelmed, and now I find out this week there's a whole new way that people are contacting us, and this is what I was swamped with this. I was, you know, you see those old movies of like, you know, Santa got a million letters from little kids, and now he's got to go through all the letters. You had mentioned on a previous show that people should start mailing me yes. clips to put on the show,
uh-huh.
and lo and behold, I come into work last week and I got a pile of letters on the front desk yeah. at Forever Dog. For a second, mm-hmm. I was like, "Oh, this is fun," you know, because your first thought when you get mail is like, "Oh, what untold treasures could be inside these envelopes and packages?" And I open the first one up, and I'm gonna go and show this on the camera here in a second, but it just at the very top of the stationery, and it said from the desk of Dirk Walker on the top of the stationery.
Yeah.
And I said, oh no, what is this? Some sort of subpoena or something. And then I looked down, and there's just a single thing typed on this stationery, and it's a YouTube URL on the stationery. And I'll show
yes,
this on camera right
now.
That's
what we told people to do.
And yeah. they
but
did
wait,
it.
Are you
evading?
Hold on. Can I ask a question? Tom, is Brett evading?
Oh, 100% he is.
The Ren Faire thing?
Oh, he just did. He thinks he did.
What's that was a the green worst. Screen?
That was the transition he just did there was.
What's happening?
Why? What's up?
I feel like I'm getting friggin' whiplash with
Hold
J.K.
on.
Simmons with all of the topics
so,
going on. This is crazy.
I can't see it.
Oh,
well, it's a
no.
letter. Brett's holding a letter up
in front of a green
and
screen.
He has there's a YouTube link just as all this person mailed to Brett. And I want to say to everybody, and you got a couple of those, a few of those?
I got a pile of them.
He got a pile of them. All I'm going to tell everybody, keep up the good work.
Yeah,
send, I want
weird,
you to send Brett.
Stuff in the mail.
You send Brett. Just send them the YouTube links on a piece of paper that you want for the show.
You know what? You should also send them in the mail, apparently, is any invitations to Renaissance fairs that we could get
exactly.
into for free.
Jody, what the hell was that?
Was that the Macarena?
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
what
that was
doing?
The well, that was the link that was sent to me from the desk of Dirk Walker. I was just making sure that it worked.
Well, first of all, Brett, before we advance, any comment on this Ren Fair thing?
Oh, I mean that would have been great if I had I'm going through all these
So you're just saying in the sea of
I'm buried.
Lost in the
I'm
shuffle.
Buried, I'm
yeah.
lost. I'm
a gotcha,
week behind.
I gotcha.
2 weeks behind.
So Jody, I just want to say to you, Jody, Brett loves you.
Put it
you.
In the mail.
Oh no, that's the nicest thing. That's so
Brett
nice.
Loves you.
I'm sorry, I just you know
he loves you.
I'm drowning in letters.
Is there an address that we could? Is there an address we could give people like a priority address? Like if they Venmo us some money, that we can give them like an address that's just like instant access, like a meet and greet style, like way to
like front of
like,
the
this
line.
This will go to the top of the line. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh. So is your takeaway from this that there's not enough ways for people to get in touch with me? Because I was trying to send the opposite.
My takeaway is that I
message.
Want some money, honey, yeah. and I don't want to miss no opportunities for free stuff, which is like money.
This is my suggestion to the listeners. When you mail your clip links and suggestions to the show physically, which
Tom,
is...
Tom, don't you soupy sales this.
No.
Are you about to soupy
I'm
sales?
I'm not going to soupy sales it. Which is now, I can say, I will speak on behalf of Julie on this one. It is our preferred method of getting clips sent to us is physical
yes.
mail. Now.
Absolutely.
And
you can't beat it.
This
well,
is,
then I'm charging a pro. Look, here's what we do. I'll charge a processing fee now.
You
know, people charge
charging?
Processing fees.
Who are you charging? Us?
I'm saying if I don't open up the envelope, moving forward, if I don't open up your envelope, if I open up your envelope and there's not a $10 bill in there.
$10?
Up no. it. I don't care. Up it. I just want, you know, I'm
up. Oh, more. He would take more. No, this is what I want to say.
Tommy's losing his mind.
You send them. Look, if you want to throw money in the envelope for Brett's sake.
I knew you were going to soupy sales.
No, I'm not. I'm saying but we're not telling anybody. If you want to throw Brett a tip, yes. You throw him a tip.
Processing fee.
Don't break the bank on this.
I may have made this joke before, but
yeah.
I think we are being so cheap that you could call us soupy rents.
You want to
give that address on the air, Brett?
Everybody found it. All I said last time was just look up Forever Dog. You can find it.
Yeah. Everybody found it.
But here's the system I would like to initiate now. And Brett, I need you to pay attention very closely okay. on this. There's a 5-tiered system for the envelopes. We need to differentiate each envelope through specific markings. If you've got a funny clip, I need you to put in the bottom left corner
a ha-ha.
You write ha-ha on the envelope.
On the envelope. Okay,
yes.
Got it.
If it is
Or draw a picture of the Joker.
If it is a scary
clip. Which iteration of the Joker?
I
don't want to get confused.
Their choice.
Jared Leto.
It could be Jared Leto. It could be Cesar Romero. It could be Heath Ledger. It could be Jack.
How about this? If it's Jared Leto, it's funny and it's a little off. If it's Cesar Romero, it's like it's just straight funny.
Sure.
Funny and a little, it's just straight funny.
I need
funny.
To hear what the other categories are before I sign off on the subcategories.
If you have a scary clip you want to send, you draw a picture of Ghostface from Scream in the corner, the bottom left corner. Or just write the word Scream. But make sure you get the knife with the letter. You got to match the logo to some degree.
I would avoid drawing knives on the outside of the envelope because then we're in because then I'm worried that the mail carrier is going to think, uh-oh.
Then draw a picture of John Kassir.
His feet.
You need to draw John Kassir's foot.
And sorry, I'm trying to keep track of this. What does John Kassir's foot indicate? That's
scary clip.
If it's
a heartwarming clip, you draw a picture of Jimmy Jazz on the bottom left corner of the envelope. Those are three.
He is so easy to draw.
Now, what are the other two that should be? We have funny, scary, heartwarming.
How about mind-blowing? Mess you up? Is there any kind of, that's something I didn't expect to see today.
Yes. Well, if it's mind-blowing...
The scanner head explosion.
You should probably make the envelope out of LSD paper.
Or you could say WTF on it.
Take that back. Don't do that.
Like a real what the fucker.
That was my favorite idea yet.
What's that?
What, the LSD one?
Yeah, that's fine. No, that's in the play.
I chose not to address it.
I'm taking that one off the table.
How am I supposed to get through all these clips?
So you want to be... You want to be tripping,
man. What stationery stores are in California that have envelopes literally made out of... You mean blotter paper? Is that what you meant?
Exactly. That's what I mean. A little Bart Simpson.
I mean, I would say put that envelope in a regular envelope and then let's have a party. Then draw the keep on trucking guy on the outside of that.
So that's for the mind blower of a clip. And then there should be a fifth.
I think current. This is going to expire in a week.
Current events.
Yeah, in the news.
In the news.
Like you better
picture
get
of
to
Matt
this
Drudge
fast.
With his fedora.
You draw a picture that's of Matt great. Drudge's that's fedora great. In the bottom left corner.
Or you can write extra, extra.
Extra. What do you think of this, Brett? Are you ready to handle this level of mail?
Yeah, thanks. That's a really great system. I think it's going to make it easier to sort these things, get through it all. So, yeah, keep that mail coming, but make sure you indicate on that envelope.
What about a sixth category, which is double threat classic? One of our areas of expertise or obsession, if someone has something about an update on the lemon stealing sluts? Or, you know, is there like did Woody Allen say something stupid? Like, is there where we could do like a, you know, like the canon?
Yes. Well, that what you do then is you either draw a canon in the bottom left corner, or you draw Mount Rushmore, except it has Alec Baldwin, Woody Allen, the ice cream taster, and John Kassir.
Do we already use John Kassir? But not his feet, is what you're saying.
John Kassir's. I want it to be John Kassir's Mount Rushmore, but with like a giant rock extension for the brim of his hat.
So many people would die going to see Mount Rushmore if they put the brim of his hat like
Is it North by Northwest that ends with the fight on Mount Rushmore?
It'd
be very different with that if if Cary Grant could have hung on to the brim of John Kassir's hat. I think it would be a very different scene.
Shucks.
This isn't going well.
That's Jimmy Stewart, not Cary Grant.
You said you like my Jimmy Stewart. Oh, it's Cary Grant?
I do, but he's not in North by Northwest.
This is a conundrum.
I got to run from this plane.
I've got to tell you, this is quite a day I'm having.
This crop duster's trying to kill me. I'm running through a field. I made it crystal clear that's the dumbest scene in movie history. Because if you got a crop duster chasing you, all you do is go backwards. Just stop and run the other way. It takes a plane a half mile to turn around. And then when it comes turning back around the other way, then you run the other way. You just keep zigzagging. The plane can't catch you. Why is he just running in a straight line away from the plane?
Or just lying. Was the premise that the plane was going to get so close to the ground that it was going to hit just a regular sized man, but not crash?
People were afraid of planes back then, right? It was like a new technology. This is basically the same thing as people running out of the theater when that train was coming towards
the camera. It really is. Now, that's a stupid, it's a stupid scene that if you even look at it with a little bit of logic, it's the dumbest thing ever.
And the whole thing takes place at that music festival?
It's at North by Northwest, exactly. Where you go to, it's like
near the podcast. The podcasting tent, was the podcasting tent affected?
I've got to run. Wet Leg are playing over at the like they're doing a surprise show. Wet Leg are playing now. Brett,
What did you get in the mail?
I got so many letters with URLs in them, and I got one pulled up here from the desk of Dirk Walker. I do want to say before we get into these clips, we have been, in classic double threat fashion, burying the lead a bit during this first part of the show here, because I do want to tease for the audience. We've got a guest coming up on this show that is going to blow your minds. An absolute incredible guest.
Yeah.
And we cannot, you know, I'll say I can't wait to hear you talk to him.
Yeah.
It's one of those guests that when they show up on the Zoom, you're like, oh, wow, it happened. There you are. This person is, this is really happening. So that's what it's going to be like when Alan Cumming joins us later in the show. Alan Cumming.
Oh my God. I can't wait.
He's in Schmigadoon. He was in Traitors. He was in GoldenEye. He's a theater legend. He's done it all. And he's going to be here on Double Threat later in the show.
Amazing. Legend.
Best guest ever.
But in the meantime, I got a clip here from the desk of Dirk Walker I got to show you.
And is the rule that if someone sends you a URL in the mail that you have to show it blind?
That's right. That was what we agreed to.
Yes. I hope he starts getting some weird clips, like weird. And he's like, this isn't YouTube. Like, he gets a lot of, like, .ru, like weird, like, Russian websites.
Like, anonymous has announcements. Like, because I'm sure we don't see all of their announcements.
I'm sure there's ones that don't pop. They don't go viral.
There's that Muppets Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
It's called anonymous.
Now, what do you got here, Brett?
All right, I've got, let's see, youtube.com/, oh, no, wait, that's a forward slash, lowercase t, uppercase g, lower, no, that's an uppercase I. I mean, that's the mistake I made. That's an uppercase I, lowercase r.
It's like a ransom this is note. Perfect.
Four, uppercase m, lowercase q.
You see
q,
what he's trying to do here, Julie? He's trying to make, four. He's trying to do bad broadcasting
uppercase C.
So that we get mad at these letters. Eight. He's like, I have no choice. I'm just reading right. What they sent.
No.
He's trying
funny.
To do bad.
Like
he's trying
it.
To be bad at this.
It's backfiring.
Yeah.
What's okay. It brought us to a link and it looks like it's Hillary Clinton doing something.
Yeah. The title of the video is a DNC 1996 Macarena extended. And I believe this is a bunch of people at the DNC in 1996, including Hillary Clinton doing the Macarena. So let's take a look at this. All right. We got people in the audience doing the Macarena. It's Hillary.
Somebody printed out the URL and put this in an envelope and put a stamp on it and sent it to Brett.
Right? She's pretty good at it. That was good. She was good at it. All right. Got the suspenders.
This is the DNC.
Yeah.
Oh, someone's in a pride flag. Okay.
That's pretty cool. All right. Some people know the dance more than others. Hillary does not know the dance. She's just clapping.
Clapping on 1, 2, 3, and 4.
She
covered all her bases.
All right, how much
yeah.
time
do we
have? Yeah, this is one of those clips that feels like it could have been, like, did we watch 4 minutes of this? And you only
looping.
Watched 30 seconds of it.
Yeah, I think it was looping, too.
That was good. I liked it.
I like that, and it's a testament to the strength of the two-party system.
And democracy.
That's, you either can get this side of things where people are dancing to the Macarena, or you get the other side of things, which is
where they're doing the lambada, the forbidden dance.
Yes. And who doesn't want to see Ted Cruz do the forbidden dance?
Thanks, Dirk Walker.
Thank you, Dirk. Keep the letters coming.
Why not? And speaking of things coming, you won't believe who's coming up after the break. Even though we've already said his name, and soon he will confirm it with his very presence on this podcast, it's Alan Cumming, the legend Alan Cumming, right here on Double Threat. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to tell you about episode 292 of Office Hours Live, with our special guest, documentary filmmaker Lance Oppenheim, and musical guests, Melinda Sullivan and Larry Goldings. You can find us on your podcast app of choice. Goodbye.
And at YouTube.com.
And at YouTube.com/goodbye.
/Office Hours Live.
This is so wonderfully exciting because we have a beautiful guest with us, an iconic guest with us, an incredibly talented guest with us. Tom, I am so excited. I'm beside myself. What else is there to say besides welcome to the show, Alan Cumming?
Oh my goodness.
Thank you. Hello, everybody.
Alan, without disclosing how we know each other, I just want to show you my t-shirt.
Oh, you got that box.
And my beverage.
Oh, great. Mine's arrived the other day in New York. It's so funny because we've all been on the cast text group bemoaning the fact that all these people are showing off on Instagram their Schmigadoon boxes and we didn't get one.
That's disgusting. You should be showing off your boxes on the text chain.
As Twitter.
I actually have a question. That's one of the interview questions is, can you read us the latest text from the Schmigadoon text chain? Because I know that the cast keeps one and that it's very rowdy.
Hang on, I'll tell you. Schmigadoons. It's Kristen Chenoweth and she says, I can't wait to get home and see if I got one. because we're all talking about.
Are you talking about the boxes?
Uh huh. That's so funny.
Yes. That's what we're talking about.
I saw Julie Benko. Is that her name? The fabulous, funny girl understudy got one.
Oh, did she? Oh, great. Yeah, a lot of people brought Josh Groban got one and sent it and tagged me on it. I thought, how dare you?
Well, from Sweeney, you should have a Sweeney text chain too, I think.
We should, me and him, we should have a Sweeney and Sweeney lookalike.
Cerverus, I'm trying to think who else would be on that. But we should start by talking about Schmigadoon. And tell me when you got the call, what you thought, and sort of how excited were you this season to know that you'd be doing sort of a Sweeney thing, and just your relationship with the show. Could you talk about it a little bit?
Yes. So it was in 2020 when we were like deep in lockdown, and it was about 6 months into lockdown. I'd been having this lovely time in the Catskills, in my house in the Catskills, with just my husband and my dogs. And then it sort of became, I was sort of thinking, so what's, you know, talking to my agents and managers, so what is anything starting to film? I've heard rumors of something starting, and what's, you know, anything? And I sort of thought, I'm kind of ready to start working again. I've had a lovely time. I love my husband, but we, you know, I could do with a break. And and it was 6 months, it was a gorgeous amount of time. Anyway, then I just got this, it was like a dream. It was sort of, here's, not only is it a job, but it's in Canada where it'll be safe and the numbers aren't so high because it's all pre-vaccination. And it's this crazy show called Schmigadoon with all these people that you love. And I don't know, it was just perfect. I went for 2 weeks, Lala and I went, my dog, we went for 2 weeks to this lovely lake house to quarantine. So we weren't allowed to go, you know, we could go to the garden, but we couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't go to the lake. So it's a bit perverse coming, renting a lake house and you can't go to the lake, but you could look at it. And then we went to Vancouver and we shot there. And it was really magical the first season because it was sort of like, it was like that thing that people say, it was sort of like, you know, theater camp. I've never been to theater camp and I never want to, but I think that's the closest I'm going to get is that, because we were all, you know, weren't really in a bubble. We could go out of the thing, but a lot of us were staying in the same hotel. You know, there were some restaurants open, you could do some things, but it felt very that we were in this little, we're all in it together. And you couldn't go home at weekends, or, you know, if you had a gap in filming, you couldn't go home. So it made for this very kind of, you know, really concreted our friendship and our camaraderie. So we had such a hoot, and it was a magical time. And then we made really good friends, I think partly more so than ever because of that sort of all being in it together in the middle of a pandemic. And then, so this year, it was all, we weren't sure if it was going to happen again, of course, all those things. But I sort of, in a way, it was kind of more difficult this year because all my dates were squashed because I had to go to Scotland to do this bizarre solo dance piece that I had decided to do about the life of Robert Burns, age 75. And all my stuff was done first in the first month. So it was a different experience. It was like normal, you know, it was like they try and squash your dates so that you're in and out. But I kind of would have liked to have been more spread out a little bit to sort of see it. Like Ariana, I didn't see at all in her bit when she came. I had gone by then. And so it was sort of a different experience, but also it was more sort of, in a funny way, in the first season, you know, it was so lovely to be just doing something so nice and sort of wholesome, and
yes,
Mere Men Love was so sort of sweet and tender. And then, and it was, again, that was probably, I needed that, or it was a nice thing to do at that time in all our lives. So then I was ready to get a bit more down and dirty in the second season. So it was kind of nice.
Yes.
And, you know, to be a bit darker and weirder.
And had you always wanted to play Sweeney? Had that ever occurred to you?
Oh, yes, it had occurred. I mean, it had occurred to me and to many other people, but I hadn't wanted to. It's one of these things that if you're a man of a certain age and you've done any theatre, any musicals especially, and also if you've done any sort of dark musicals, mm-hmm. then, you know, there's a trajectory, which obviously includes Sweeney Todd. And so everyone was saying to me, oh, you should do it, you should do it. And I was like, oh, God, all right. Anyway, so I went once to Chicago to the Chicago Shakespeare Festival to do a workshop of Sweeney Todd to see if I wanted to do it with Heather Headley playing Mrs. Lovett. Mm-hmm. And it was there that I realized I don't want to play Sweeney Todd. I just feel like Mrs. Lovett's a much better part. I have this joke, but it's not really a joke. Like Kristen and I were, have been talking about that we were going to do it as a concert performance, actually, and then the dates didn't work out with an orchestra, to do a concert performance of Sweeney Todd where I would play Mrs. Lovett and she would play Sweeney.
Oh, my God. I mean, Kristen Chenoweth singing Epiphany in her soprano would be magnificent.
It'd be incredible. And so, I sort of just think I know there's a certain trajectory you're supposed to take when you're an actor, but I've never really taken that. And I don't want to play Sweeney Todd. And I admire people who do, but it's just not the part for me. I think the thing about him is that he doesn't really change that much. He arrives and he's full of vengeance. And at the end, he's still full of vengeance and nothing's really happened. I mean, lots has happened, but nothing has really changed him. So I feel it's not so interesting for me in the way that I like to like characters to go, if you see what mm-hmm. I mean. So yes, but we're still, you know, we were kind of talking more seriously about actually doing a production with swapping them. And then, you know, the one right now with Josh and
Anna Lee.
Anna Lee, which I went to see on the opening, I thought was fabulous. Really fabulous. And my friend Stephen Hoggett, who choreographed the crazy solo dance piece that I did last year, he choreographed it. I think his work in that is incredible. Because the thing about Sweeney Todd is there's no dance breaks. There's no, you know, there's no bits when people dance. But he has yet, in spite of that, has managed to make it a very movement-heavy production. And I think it really adds to the atmosphere and to the story and to the experience. So I really thought it was great. Anyway, so that coming along, of course, you can't really do another Broadway one for a while. So we'll see. I mean, life is long, I suppose. But it's obviously because of this, because of Shemeika Doone, everyone's asking. And I just keep trying to say, no, I don't want to. But ask Kristen Chenoweth.
But your version of Dooley was so much stranger than Sweeney, because there's that scene where you're on a double date. And I remember when we talked about this in the writers, where we wanted it to be like that scene from The Fisher King, where they all go on that strange date with Amanda Plummer and Robin Williams and Jeff Bridges and Mercedes Rule. And yeah, I was told that you couldn't keep a straight face, that you kept breaking and you had a hard time filming that scene.
Well, it was difficult because they wanted to do it in one shot, like a four shot.
Why were you laughing? Why couldn't you stop laughing? You were doing all that business with the knife.
Yes, I'm shoveling mashed potatoes into my mouth with a huge cleaver, a plastic one. It wasn't a real cleaver, but I mean, that number one. And also, we were all squashed up into that little thing. Kristen just makes me laugh. Like, and she was, you know, and we were sort of flirting as well, which is when you flirt with someone you've known, like your sister, it's just, and of course we had to do a make out and have a, do a sort of bed scene as well. That was insane. But flirting.
Let's stop and talk about that for a moment, because that scene where she kisses you is a very, very sexy kiss. She really lays one on you, Alan. And I want to talk about your relationship with Kristen and how fun that was to do. Or was it weird that it was,
it was
so sexy?
But it was so, yeah, I mean, it is weird. It is weird. It was, I mean, the thing is, I think, in a funny sort of way, you know someone so well and are such good friends and are, and you know, it's a very brother and sisterly sort of cookie brother and sister relationship. But at the same time, because of that, we have immense comfort with each other and shared very intimate things and are very, you know, HRs, not at all coming into the equation in terms of our, what we'd say to
your
each
intimacy
other.
Coordination.
Yes. So actually because of that part of our relationship, it made it easy to be really raunchy with each other. But it was also just, we just had to go for it. I mean, you just have to go for it in those situations. And also I come in, I'm like, I want to give me an offer now. I'm all fired up. So it helps in that sort of way. But it was absolutely hilarious. And I mean, it's funny, we didn't talk about it for a long time afterwards. It's only recently when it's suddenly, you know, I actually thought it had been cut, because I, you know, when we do the you know, Good Enough to Eat song, which I loved, I thought that had happened before then. So I thought, oh, maybe they cut that bit. And then it wasn't, because I'd forgotten the story. And then it was the next episode I realized, oh no, there it is.
It's so shocking. Kiss is shocking.
Yes.
And were the kids afraid of you at all, or they thought they were like, oh no, because you're a little scary.
I was very much trying to make sure they were okay. I would talk to them and everything as me, and because the thing about me is that I've done so many kids things, like I will forever be Mr. Froop and Spy Kids, and even kids that are kids now, even though I shot that 20 years ago, kids still know it and watch it. So I've got a kind of, a leg up in terms of I'm always Mr. Floops. So I'm always kind of fun, and they want to talk to me about that. So I was kind of trying to, between takes, say, I'm going to be scary now, and, but don't be alarmed. But they were all quite jaded old showbiz loves. Yeah. They've been around the block a few times.
Yeah, smoking cigarettes and having martinis in between their homeschooling.
Yes, exactly.
And the Annie and the Rooster Lily connection must have been, it must have been incredible deja vu to dance around with Kristen with a never fully dressed kind of vibe to that number. Yes. As well. It must have been like a beautiful full circle moment.
It was really funny. And sort of, because I think that's such a big part of our getting to know each other, Annie, and that, what's it called again? Easy Street. That big extravaganza, and it was so nice. We were, when we hosted the Tonys together, we were so nervous, like just peeing our pants and just shaking. It was just so, it's so scary. And when we went out, when they introduced us, what I hadn't realized, and I don't know why I hadn't noticed, but the orchestra was playing Easy Street when we both walked out, which was so, like, it gave us such confidence, because it was something we, it's sort of, that's our song. So, so doing it again after all these years was, the whole thing was weird. Everything's weird in that show, and sort of, hilariously sick and wrong and brilliant, and that's, I really think that's my sort of wheelhouse in general, actually. So all fitted in, and Kristen's.
Tom, I don't know if you saw Alan and Kristen host the Tonys, but there's a photo in my address book that I gave a friend of mine of the two of them when Kristen was dressed up as E.T.
Mm-hmm. That's hilarious. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a really, they were so funny. It was like watching two of your most unhinged friends, like, say, like, oh my God, I can't believe we got this gig.
We said, because Fun Home was one of the nominees for Best Musical. And so I'm blah, blah, I'm, in a nice suit sort of going, and next we have blah, blah, blah. And she comes out in dressed as E.T. And everyone's like, what the fuck is going on? And I turned around and go, Kristen, I said Fun Home. That's all we did. And it was just hilarious. And also, the other thing we did was that there was a bit where I dressed up as the lady from The King and I. And Kristen came up from underneath, from a trap inside my dress, as the King of Siam. And again, so wrong on so many levels. And what was so hilarious was that initially in rehearsals, there was four little Asian kids were playing like the little prince and princesses of the, the thing. And so they came out too, out of my dress, underneath my dress. But when we did rehearsals, it took too long. And so there was just, it took too long. I'd run out of things to sing. I was singing, Whenever I feel afraid, da, 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 da. Oh no, or Hello Young Lover, something like that. I can't remember one of her songs. And then this voice of God suddenly went, okay, stop. Okay, we're going to cut two of the kids. Okay. And so these two kids were like, what? What's going on? And Kristen said that she had to go down again with the other two, down and under the trap door, And she said that she saw the two, a little boy really upset, and he went, I don't, what, why? And she went, oh, honey, it's just because of time. And the little boy went, what's time?
Oh, Jesus.
And then they did it again, and it was still took too long. So the other two got cut as well.
She
saw them all at the craft services table, and she heard them as she was going back downstairs. One little boy was just pointing at her and went, I'm as tall as her.
Oh, kid, you got a lot to learn.
I know, they're devastated. There's just four little devastated children wandering around Broadway now, remembering the day they got fired at the Tonys.
I'm pretty confident there's more than four devastated little children wandering around Broadway right now. Yeah. If I have anything to say about it. Now, Tom, can I throw to you to ask about your not only your favorite show, but the subject of a very special event but you had recently?
Look, the one thing I can't get past, though, before anything. So that was your crew gift. The cup is the crew gift that you're holding up, Julie?
No, it's like a promotional box for your consideration. Mm-hmm. And you know, apparently Josh Groban and other people in the community got this big, beautiful box, and it has a T-shirt and a cup, and it has all kinds of fun little things like shmatas and tchotchkes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And a cushion that where you press it and it all goes, sequins go funny, and then
one of those pillows where in one direction it's gold, and the other direction it says "Welcome to Schmigadoon" on it.
Wow. Okay. Because I
don't think we were getting it. The cast weren't getting it, and we had to cause a near riot.
Well, I don't like that.
Because Anne Harada said, "Why are you sending it to all the Broadway people? They're watching anyway."
Well, it's their consolation for not being on the show, because there's only ten of us. It's like, do you fit under Alan Cumming's dress? And if not, you're cut.
You're fired.
Yeah, my mind went where my mind went. I thought it was a crew gift, and all I could think about was the worst crew gift I ever got. Honestly, for the last 20 minutes, all I've been thinking. I worked on a show that I'm not going to name as a writer, and then they sent us tube socks at the end of the season. They sent a pair of tube socks with the name of the show on the tube socks.
No.
I'm not going to name the show, but it rhymes with Baborse.
Uh-huh. Oh, God, that's what they gave you for divorce? I mean, sorry.
It was the show Baborse, Julie. I was on the... We got a tube socks.
I remember. That's insane.
And they had the Lakers colors for some reason. It was like gold and purple. It's like, we're not in Los Angeles even. This is, look, they're very nice tube socks. So
no, that's madness.
Thank you so much for the tube socks. All I could think of, what's the worst crew gift you ever got, Alan?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, actually.
Or the best one. We could be positive also.
Well, I mean, the ones I like are when they don't really say the name of the thing. Because I remember once, years ago, I was in this film and I got a really lovely jacket. It's a really great crew jacket. You know, it was a crew gift. Everyone got it, but it was really sort of cool and one that you actually wanted to wear. You might have bought, you know, rather than it being sort of a fun thing that you can wear when you're at a bonfire and everyone's cold. So I was in this, I know what it was. Is that, you know, that fish and chip shop in New York, the Salt and Battery?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
So I was standing in the line for some chips, and this man behind me sort of went, "Hey, are you in that film Get Carter?" And like, the film hadn't come out yet. And I was like, "Wow, yes, how do you know that?" And he went, "Because it's written on the back of your neck." And they'd put the logo on the inside of the collar. And I had my collar up because it was cold.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought, I'm never wearing this jacket again. No. I'm never wearing anything it's difficult when you're an actor, I think, and well known, to go around with something.
With the logo the name
of your thing on it. It's really, I don't know. I take a lot of those jackets. I like getting jackets, but I take a lot of them upstate. And it is good for when people are cold and we're all sitting around the bonfire.
Sure.
I don't know. I think there was something really good on Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion. I think it was something to do with, I know, we got a post-it. Post-it, like you put post-its in it and it came out like a little post-it dispenser.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, that's
that was clever. That was a long time ago. I mean, I don't know. I get lots of, I'm really trying to cull my sort of, you know, acquisitional side and try and Grant, my husband, works at or teaches an art class at the Harvey Milk High School, so I give a lot of my sort of free shit that I get to the kids there, and they love it, and it's so nice that you think to give it to people who really appreciate it rather than just sitting in a box.
Sure. So some,
but you
so
know what, once I got a certain job, but once I got a, there was a film I directed, and the crew gift was a nice gray long sleeve sweatshirt. And it said on it a line that I said to Karen Black in the film, which was "filthy slapper." right? That's because she was, I had a big row with her because she was trying to, she was having sex with David Boreanaz and I thought he was my boyfriend. And so I called her filthy slapper and I called her an inebriated whore and all these things. you should go on YouTube. It's called Suffering Man's Charity or else Ghostwriter. Sometimes it's called that. But it's David Boreanaz and Karen Black. And it's like a 10-minute scene when they I come in at the end and we start shouting. But it's fantastic. She was just had such abandon. But anyway, it had the sort of, it just said SMC for Suffering Man's Charity rather than the whole name. And it said filthy slapper across the front of it, which is good. But so that was good. But then I was doing a show on Broadway and there was a lot of problems in the film and sort of people were suing each other, the producers and everything. And I was editing it. And one day a box arrived with all these sweatshirts, which said filthy slapper. And I thought, oh, that's nice. They've sent me the rest of the leftover ones and I can give it to the cast of the show. And I got, oh, how great. And so I took all the sweatshirts out and at the bottom of it were legal papers. And I was editing them.
Oh my God.
And that's show business, ladies and gentlemen, and those who don't define as I am.
Now, I am a huge fan of The Traitors, and it was my favorite show. All I do is talk about it to anybody for the last 6 months. And I even had a cake. Do you have a picture of my birthday cake, Brett?
Yes. Oh, my God. Look at that. It's me on the top. Oh, how funny.
Look at that.
Oh, wow.
My
is that all the contestants?
My partner, Julia, made this.
How did you choose which outfit for him to be in? There's so many contenders. Oh,
this was all a surprise for me. I could not believe. She was like, hey, here's your...
And that's great,
like,
Tom.
She pulled a sheet off of it, and I was just like, oh my God, how elaborate is that? It really is, in the scheme of what you would call reality television, I think it's the apex of reality television because it's so much fun and it's engaging at the same time, which shows are usually like they get one or the other, but you keep this thing so entertaining and it seems like it was truly the time of your life in a lot of ways to just get to play that role.
Yes, it was absolutely hilarious. Absolutely. I mean, an absolute gas. And what you said is accurate. I am playing a role. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what was, you know, for me, I couldn't understand why that, you know, on paper, they want you to go, I mean, it was something they said, oh, there's this possibility they want to talk to you about hosting a reality competition show in a castle. And I was like, what? And, you know, I've hosted things like awards and things, but nothing like that. And but when I spoke to them, I realized that they wanted me to, you know, there were these English, they're called Studio Lambert, these English people, and they wanted to, you know, what I'm doing is very much what came out of that conversation about that sort of camp theatrical character and a sort of dandy Scottish laird. It's quite menacing. And that excited me because I wasn't just going, hello, welcome, you know, now we're going to do this contestant, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So it was actually much more of a creative process. And also because it was the first time it'd been done in English, it was a Dutch version before, which I was able to see. And just because they were so, I mean, they just let me go nuts. And I did all these fun things and I got to help write the things and put all those crazy quotes in, all, you know, Plato and Shakespeare and everything. It was just great. And I think in a way, it's funny because we're just talking about, you know, Dooley Blight being sort of weirder and sort of more subversive than Sidney Todd. And in a funny way, that I guess that's kind of my thing, that even when I'm hosting a reality show, I'm kind of subverting the form a little bit because I'm sort of making it into something. And luckily, you know, people really responded to that, I think, the sort of camp of it and the theatricality of it and the fact that and my outfit's becoming such a big thing.
Oh my God. You don't really
notice what the hosts of reality shows wear normally, but because it was because they were so nuts, I think. And I really like the fact that they encouraged me to do that, and it's become a sort of a part of the an integral part of the brand of the show. And so now the kind of thing is they're going to do another one in a few months, and it's kind of, where do we go from here, you know?
Sure, sure. And what was the general, what was your role in it? Because it took place over, is it about 2 weeks? Is that about how long the...
It was slightly longer. I think, I mean, I went to rehearsal. It was like about, I was there like a month, but it might have been like 3 weeks for the actual shooting of the show. Mm-hmm.
And you would, were you just keeping tabs on things constantly, or were you just popping in and popping out? Because you're there, and then you're letting them kind of do their business, and then you're kind of popping in for the round table stuff. And just
I would do it actually, I'm thinking about it now. Well, there were 10 episodes, and so we tried to do them all, and it was a few that were a couple of days long, but they were mostly all done in the same day, so maybe it was just about two and a half weeks too. But anyway, yeah, I would always be there, but like there's large chunks of the day, you know, when they did all their reality stuff and they're all kind of spiraling and plotting against each other, I was upstairs in my room in the castle, you know, having a laugh. And then they would kind of fill me in on what was going on. So generally it would be my first thing was I'd arrive, get ready, and I'd do the breakfast. Like it is in the show, I would do the breakfast. I'd come down to breakfast and say who died.
Yeah. Which is also the funniest thing I've ever seen on any show like that, is you just doing a soliloquy with the picture of the dead person, and then just throwing it to where you actually hear it bounce off camera.
I know. It's so good. And their faces, they were so shocked. That was what was so good about it. And it was quite good because I didn't really interact with the contestants. There was a couple of times when it was raining and we're at, you know, outside, and we had to kind of all shelter under a tent. And that was sort of one of the few times I'd actually sort of chat. I felt it was important. And I'll know for next time as well. It's really important that I maintain that character, and I'm kind of, that they should be a bit scared of me. And I'm sort of this distant sort of authoritative figure. But I do love when I did things like that. And, you know, I love when I said, I can't remember who it was somebody who'd been on Survivor, and, you know, they'd got booted out. And I took the thing off and I went, oh, blah, blah, alas, a survivor no more. Fling. It's things like that just made me howl with laughter.
It's so funny because it's not, it's like you're, it's this, the scale is so, You're so enormous, and then you're just doing something so offhand. It just breaks. Like, I was not ready for that. I thought it was the funniest thing. What was it like to watch that unfold and get into those like high drama moments, especially all the way down to the final scene with the fire and all of that?
Well, that, I mean, the round tables every night. That was the last thing I did. And I, after that, I would come off and I'd be like, holy shit. You know, there'd always be some incredible, awkward, emotional sort of thing had happened. And then I would go home. That's when I would go home. But I couldn't go to sleep until, because then they would do the traitors in their turret, you know, and who was going to be murdered. So I couldn't go to sleep until I'd found out who was going to be murdered. I would literally stay up like a little boy at Christmas. Uh-huh. And the producer would text me. But the round tables were super intense, and obviously they went on for much longer than are in the show, and then there's a lot of waiting around whilst they did all the votes, and when the people, they would come in and see what everyone had said, and then choose, you know, which order they were going to reveal them in, mm-hmm. and to make it the most dramatic. And so it was a very drawn out process, and they played this really intense music right before I came on. Everyone had to be really quiet, and this super kind of choral scary music, and then I would come on, and in the gaps when we're waiting for things to happen, I would be really like, no talking, no. Mm-hmm. I'd be really bossy with them, so it was a very tense, and I had to sort of keep the tension up, and it was you know, I had to work really hard to maintain my poker face a lot of the time. And on the very last one, the one outside, when Siri won, that was, they told me there was, they had to like cut around me because I was like agape, mouth agape.
Yes.
And the funny thing was that it was, it was more brutal than even on TV. It was more like I had gone. I had said, oh, and Cerise is the winner and blah, blah, blah. And I had a little thing in my ear all the time. And they said, okay, go now. And I sort of swanned up the steps in my cape. And then they said, come back down, come back down. They're really turning on Siri and it's getting nasty. You know, Andy and Quentin were going for her. So I had to go back down and sort of say, you know, they're saying, emphasize it's a game. I'm like, you know, this has been such a good game and you've all played so well. Andy, what a great game. But it is a game. Yeah. And the best player of this game, who's the winner of the game, is Siri. So I really had to calm everything down.
Yeah, it was really, it's strange because I guess that even though everybody obviously knows they're on a show and that they're not actual sharing their actual lives, but when you're jammed together, that bedfellows vibe, people do attach and they're looking for something to ground you is what it seemed like. It seemed like Siri was the ultimate version of just like giving like off, like she's an anchor. And could always be somebody you'd talk to and trust and not never put her under the microscope.
She's very zen in her whole, even about the whole winning thing. And just in the times I've seen her recently when we're doing press stuff, she's got such a great sort of grounded attitude about things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when people say, would you have changed anything? Do you regret the things you did? And she went, no, I don't regret anything. I won. Yeah. And I just love that. I love that she says that.
Yeah.
And also, do you know what was funny? Was Quentin, who I thought was such a darling, but such a dope, because it was incredible that he got to the end because he didn't get any of them right ever.
He was literally 0 for 10 or however many votes.
Yes, yeah, so just by kind of some weird mathematical error, he managed to get to the final. But what was hilarious about him was, it was awful as well because there was a bit that we didn't use where I had to interview the final five about, you know, how they were feeling and what they would do with the money if they won. And that was so, because I obviously knew that two of them were not going to be getting the money. But when Siri said, I'm a traitor, I was standing between Andy and Quentin, and Andy collapsed, and Quentin sort of like, his mouth was just agape. He was just like a huge open mouth. And there was a little piece of saliva going from his top teeth down to his bottom teeth and kind of just like wobbling in the wind. Mm-hmm. And he had his mouth open agape, like shocked for ages. And I couldn't take my eyes off it. And it reminded me of, you know, remember in The Good Wife, when in the first episode, there was a little piece of thread on Peter's, when he's making the speech, when he's resigning. And Juliana sees the little piece of thread. She wants to pick it off. And that's what I felt it was like. I was obsessed with Quentin's saliva.
But with spit.
The spit line.
No, it was breathtaking in so many ways. And talking about Quentin, Julie, his career, he's a political consultant. And he was wrong on every single contestant for every single episode. He guessed wrong 100%. All I could think of was that there's some politician watching this and being like, wait, is this that's the guy working with us? It's like, oh no, we have the wrong guy.
But he's failing upward,
right? Also because he did that's all of that is true, but he also sounded so authoritative and made really good points and filled the space in the way that those people on those political shows do. And you know it's just, I think you're kind of saying nothing, but you're saying it well and intelligently.
Yes, and except he just happened to be wrong every single time.
So funny that there are some people. Did you know who any of the contestants were when you went into it? Were you a fan of any of the shows that they'd been on, or were you familiar with any of them at all?
I've never lied about this, but I do feel slightly ashamed. But I knew who Kate was because I'd seen some episodes of Below Deck, and I mean I usually watch shows like that either in hotels or on a plane. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I'm in a hotel and I feel like a little child who's not allowed to have sweets normally, and I put on trashy TV. So I'd seen, because I quite liked Below Deck, you know, when she was on it. And then I knew who Brandy was because I think she'd kind of entered the zeitgeist in a way because she, yes. you know, flinging wine in people's faces.
And Leanne Rimes had stolen her husband, I remember.
That's right. There's that. That's right.
She was on that show. Yeah.
I knew who she was. And then I knew Ryan, Kitty Ryan, because he was a swimmer. Mm-hmm. But the rest of them were a mystery to me. And it was so funny because I had pictures of them all on the wall in my room in the castle mm-hmm. to sort of try and remember them and the real people as well, you know, all the contestants to try and be familiar with them. It was on the first day, like a couple of them were wrong. First of all, were some of the people were completely the wrong people. Mm-hmm. And because something actually happened, we had to shoot the beginning again because one of the people got COVID. And so he was just there for the first couple of hours. They tested and he went and he left. So we had to do it again with a new person. And all that was a bit confusing for my pictures on the wall. And I got the wrong. Plus, I said, is it too much to ask that you get up-to-date plastic surgery pictures of the contestants? Because like a couple of them aren't looking so similar to the pictures I've got on the walls. Help me out here.
You sound like every TSA agent I've ever had to pass to get on a flight. Boy, they are judgmental.
Yes, I'm very judgy about when I have to learn the wrong plastic surgery.
And you call it your castle, right? You say, welcome to my castle.
Yes.
Did you, at a certain point, your character was convinced that it belonged to him, that you lived there?
Yes, I mean, that was from the word go. From the word go, it was just like, I'm Alan Cumming, welcome to my castle. And I just loved the fact. I made it.
Yeah. Amazing.
Immediately not real and true. And, you know, but people do think it's my cut. People say, do you have a cut? And I'm like, no. I have a nice cottage. I don't have a castle.
Which outfit was your favorite of all of the outfits?
Sophie's Choice. I mean, I did enjoy the final cake.
Yes, that's really what Sophie's Choice was about. That's absolutely what that movie was about when it comes down to it.
But, yes, but if I had to...
We're going to do a remake. Yeah.
It would be a remake. It would just be clothes. She's got to give one
in your castle. Away.
Terrible. I think I do enjoy that cake. My favorite thing though, which I do wear sometimes in real life now, is it's the little sort of French policeman. It's like a black, dark blue cape mm-hmm. with little holes through it. That's a sort of, and had a little pork pie hat. It was when I'm walking in the darkness towards you and I'm like, you know, the traitors are slinking to their lair outside. That was the outfit I wore because we had to have something. So I shot all those in one lump and we had to have something that would cover whatever I was wearing in each episode. So, it was a sort of a generic thing. And then that's why I had these huge, long blue gloves that went up to my kind of biceps because you wouldn't see what I was wearing underneath. So it would fit into any episode. So it's just hilarious. Sort of because of that, I had these Audrey Hepburn vegan leather gloves that are just ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Well,
my wardrobe has, I mean, a lot of those suits actually were mine, but all the stuff that Sam Spector, the stylist, kind of augmented them with, I got to keep. So I've got these crazy little new, you know, accessories now that I...
And your husband's like, put those gloves on and do the dishes.
Yeah. Well, the thing was that I would sort of say, you know, there was something, I'd got these really good boots, like big chunky boots. And then there was like a necklacey thing and then the gloves. And I said, this would be a really good sort of going to a sort of funny dance party in a sort of fetish club. It was just a jock strap. So that's the way I thought about it all.
Well, there's always season two.
Right. Yeah. Who knows where we're going to go?
Yeah.
Can we do a little lightning round before we let you go?
I love a lightning round, like a quiz.
Yeah, just a quickie Q&A kind of thing.
Yes, go ahead.
We don't expound. We just ask and you answer. You did all the roles in... Macbeth, which we call the Scottish play, but I assume, do you just call it the play from where you're from or is it just Macbeth?
I mean, people do. I call it Macbeth because I think, okay, especially when you're playing all the parts, it's very difficult to not actually say the word. So, and I don't believe in all that sort of...
Yeah, superstitions for stuff, suckers. No. What was your favorite role to do when you did all the roles? Is it the porter?
No, I know I cut the porter. Didn't have the porter. We cut the porter. He goes sometimes. I think it might. I think it would be either Lady Macbeth, who I loved because she was so like she first appeared in from a bath in a bath, and sort of.
Wow.
I did, and also I had to have sort of sex with myself, but it was kind of hilarious. But either Lady Macbeth, who I thought was hilarious and awful, or Ross, because he has to tell Macduff that his children have died, and it's just, oh. I can't remember. There's just a beautiful, beautiful line about how hard it is, the thing he's going to have to say. And I love playing Ross.
You've worked with these amazing women. You've had these like fabulous female collaborators. And I wondered if you could tell us something that we wouldn't know about Miriam Margolyes, for example. Like, well, like, does she really like sauerkraut or like, is there something about her that we wouldn't ordinarily know that you know?
Well, you know, she likes eating raw onions. She actually does love.
Oh my God.
And she had, and the other day we talked the other day because she's had this, she had to go into hospital for this operation. She called me, left a message on my WhatsApp and said, "Well, darling, you'll be glad to know I've had my groin shaved."
Okay.
Do we really?
Yes, so, we must.
And she gets her underpants from Amsterdam, place in Amsterdam, and her partner dyes them in Amsterdam. She lives in Amsterdam. She gets these white underpants, and then she gets her wife to dye them because she doesn't like white ones. There's no words.
No words, no notes. What about Kristen? Is there something that you know about Kristen that we wouldn't ordinarily know that you can share?
She's obsessed with slushies.
Well, she's been mixing Slurpees lately. She did a TikTok where she figured out if you go to 7-Eleven, they don't care if you mix Slurpees, and she's very excited about that.
There's a vitamin one. She thinks she's been really healthy now because she gets a vitamin water Slurpee. that's really her, you know, like going to a health farm, a spa. But she's, she just has the worst diet of anyone I know, really, but, you know.
Whatever she's doing is working. And then Jennifer Jason Leigh. And I want to throw to Brett because Anniversary Party is his favorite movie.
Oh, is it really?
Brett, oh, yeah.
Brett, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Alan. So I've been a huge fan of yours for a long time.
I'm the producer.
I'm the producer on the show. Hi. I saw Anniversary Party in college. I just loved it. And then I saw it just came on Criterion Channel last week. So I'm looking forward to rewatching it. I just wanted to know what the experience of, I mean, it just seemed like such a fun, collaborative, communal kind of movie. I'm wondering just like how it happened and how you and Jennifer decided to make it and what the experience of making it was like.
And something we wouldn't know about Jennifer ordinarily.
It was a great experience. I mean, we did it because she took over from Natasha Richardson in Cabaret when I did Cabaret on Broadway the first time. And then kind of shortly after she arrived, Jennifer, I went off to Rome. I took a break and went off to Rome to make Titus, that film. So we kind of didn't really spend as much time together as we thought. So after we were both out of Cabaret, we became better friends. And we thought, let's do something. We feel like we haven't really worked together properly. So, and she just made a, what do you call those films where they, those Swedish films where they don't have any makeup?
Oh, Dogma.
Yeah, she's in a Dogma one in Africa. And we just, ours wasn't Dogma at all, but it was on digital video. So the first studio picture to actually use digital video. So we just decided to do that and do it in a way that would be easy and to get a bunch of people that we knew and to sort of write for specific people and to talk about things that we felt were, you know, interesting and were interesting to us. About a marriage and about Hollywood and all those things. So it was one of those things that was so, you know, it came from a place of friendship and wanting to work with people you love. And everything about it was kind of not easy, but it really flowed. We wrote it, we got all this cast, we had a window of time when we could do it. And we said to the money people, it's now or never. They gave us the money, we made it, it went really well. Cutting it was easy. It got into Cannes. It came out. You know, it was just sort of a great, great experience. I think we're spoiled after that. Everything else seems much harder.
Yeah, generally, if you say to the money people, it's now or never, usually I didn't know that word.
Bye.
To just say,
yeah.
Hey, this is, it's now or never. We need that money.
Yeah, exactly. They would be like, a taxi for one. Yeah. Something about Jennifer you might not know. She, what can I tell you about it? You don't know. She's hilarious. I mean, I think that's the thing. She just seems sort of so dark and, you know, that's her kind of vibe, that she's got this, she always plays these torture characters. She's actually hilarious. And she's got the most, I'll tell you, she has the most ordered fridge.
Oh,
I've ever met. Like, it's, wow. You go in and it's got like bottles of water like this, and then like, you know, sushi. I mean, it's just, it's like a commercial, her fridge. It's like an impossible person's fridge.
Wow.
And also always stacked to the gunnels with food, because she eats in all the time. Well, not all the time, but she, yeah, her, I would say her fridge and her pantry are the most ordered things I've ever seen.
And then finally, Liza Minnelli is, what can you tell us about Liza? You had that show on Fire Island with her.
Yes.
Probably changed the course of history as far as what I consider to be history.
Well, also just the gayest thing ever. I mean, I said that when Liza came to Fire Island, it was like a papal visit.
It was.
If you know.
Yeah, but instead of white smoke, it was just pure glitter that was, rose from the ice could, palace. Yeah.
But you know, it's funny. I'm in Scotland right now, and I went to a little charity shop, and I got, I've got a record player, and I always buy records from charity shops. And I got Liza with a Z today in a little record shop here. She is such a darling. And what could I tell you about her that you might not know? One of the things that she always says is never stop moving. That was when I would go and see her when she was still performing in her dressing room. She had a thing saying, never stop moving. And she said her dad said that to her. He said, that's a really good mantra in life. And so I always think about that. She's just keep going, keep at it. And that's sort of her energy, is never stop moving. And now she's got this lovely life where she's, you know, she lives in LA now, and she's, when I go to visit her, I go around, I lie on her bed, and we watch Turner Classic Movies and just laugh. And she's also hilarious. And, you know, just got the most wicked sense of humor.
She must have loved seeing you in Cabaret. She must have loved what you did.
She was really kind to me, and really, yeah, it was a special sort of, I think we just kind of bonded immediately, because I think we both saw, in a funny sort of way, you know, she, when I started to do concerts on my own, I knew her quite well by then. And I was having dinner with her, and I was around at the time when I first had the offer to do, you know, to do a solo concert. And she gave me all this great advice. But really what it was is that she, you know, the whole thing about, I don't feel very confident I am confident as a singer, but I'm not, I feel that my singing is not about my, I mean, I'm not Kristen. I don't have like an insanely beautiful sound. I just sort of act songs. And Liza said, I said, I'm an actor who sings, Liza, not a singer who acts. And she goes, me too. I'm like, no, you're both things. but she really encouraged me to be my authentic self and to sing authentically, and to, you know, and I realized that's why it works when I do those shows, is because I just come on and I'm me, and I feel confident in being me. And I really got a lot of that. And also, you're prepared to be vulnerable. And I think one of the things about her as a performer is that she is incredibly vulnerable, so much. That you kind of worry for her when she's on stage sometimes, you know, you worry she's going to get through it. But she is, you know, she's got her shtick as well. But I think that's what she's really, she's the person I feel is I connected with on a sort of authenticity level, because I think we both saw that each other, we're just kind of, even though what we're playing, we kind of give it big licks and kind of let ourselves come through. And that's what I think you've got to do if you aren't Kristen Chenoweth.
And you're both weirdos. You and
I'm
Liza.
Both weirdos. Yes,
you're weirdos. And you listen to that while you're puttering around the house, and you're gonna keep moving, and you're listening to Bye Bye Blackbird. Just the first line of that first song on that concert, she just goes yes, and her voice is already kind of trembling because she's putting everything out there.
Yeah, that's what I say. I did my concert now. I talk about, or the thing I do with Ari Shapiro. He asked me about Liza, and I say the first word she ever said to me, she was in the audience of Cabaret, and I introduced Sally Bowles, and I walked out through the audience all sort of druggy, and you know, I'm all kind of, the play's in a very dark place, and I'm all track marks, and I walked past the table where Liza was, all woozy, And she grabbed my arm and went, "Terrific!" like that. That was the first thing she ever said to me.
I think we have to end the interview now because I might have to lie down after that story.
All right. That was fun.
Alan Cumming, thank you so much for being here. We love you so much and can't wait to see what you do next. And please keep us posted on, keep us posted on your next live show, because personally, I missed you at the Carlisle and I was devastated, but I know that you'll be doing something again soon when you're in town.
I'll be there. Yes, I'm not sure I'll be in town, but I'm always kind of dotting around doing concerts here and there.
Well I won't miss it.
And thank you so much. It's been such fun, and I think you're great. I really love your work and like all the stuff you've done. And I was so excited when I saw that you're a part of Schmigadoon, because your spirit and your wit and everything, I really really enjoy.
Thank you. This has just been a dream working on this show and working with you, and thank you so much for coming on this show. And and as far as Traitors is concerned, I have a theory that Andy Warhol would have loved this show. Do you agree?
Well, I've got one thing to say about Traitors. Tom,
Yeah,
you have received the most votes and are banished from the game.
Oh my God.
Please come forward to the circle of truth.
That's the nicest thing anybody ever said to me.
Bye.
Oh my goodness.
That was the best.
That was truly the best. That Alan Cumming might be the best guest. And I'm not putting the other guests down, because we've had a lot of great guests. That's top of the pyramid.
He's so incredible. And we are so lucky to have gotten a chat with him. And just what an, you know, the word icon is tossed around a lot, but he really, truly is an icon. I just adore him and have been a fan of his, and he's just done so much. Do yourself a favor and look even at his Wikipedia just to get a sense of the breadth of his work. He is so fabulous and remarkable, and what a treasure.
Never stop moving was the phrase.
Well, she used to take this dance class over by Columbus Circle with a guy whose name I'm not sure I remember, but I'm looking up. She took a dance class before she moved to LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that she lives in LA.
One thing people don't know, Julie, LA is my lady.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know that song? LA is my lady.
Frank. Luigi. So LA, she would see this dance, jazz dance teacher, Luigi, and his motto was never stop moving, and she adopted it. She would go to his class every, I don't know if it was every day, every week, but he died at age 90.
Apparently that's a big thing for Luigi's, is to never stop moving, whether it's this dance Luigi or Super Mario Brother Luigi. You keep running or you get hit by a turtle shell.
I mean, they never stop moving those tickets, which must be nice if you had anything to do with that movie. But I will be eating from the 99 cent store for the rest of my life. Anyway, I will say, if LA is Milady, New York is Mijuli.
There, I like that. I like
about
that. And Atlanta is the sign.
Mijuri Taylor Greene country.
Yeah.
How dare you? She's from.
Well,
she's
part
from,
of it is she ain't. She's listen, from Atlanta.
I looked it up this week because I was like, where I know the town she's from. She is barely from Georgia. She is from the northwest corner. It's the last part of Georgia you can be in before you get into Tennessee or Alabama, depending on what direction you're
the
going.
The northwest corner. That's where the Smothers Brothers used to sit. She's trying to think of Hollywood Square.
She's not welcome in Atlanta. She's not welcome in Atlanta, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Do you know who is welcome in Atlanta? Ludacris.
Right. Whereas she just is Ludacris.
Yes. What's your favorite Ludacris song, Brett?
Well, it'd have to be area codes because it mentions my area code.
Why don't you sing a little
bit? Right, and like give your phone number out again, please.
What's it's that? The second area code he mentions. I'll give you that. You got three numbers, and then after
that,
you
know your area code.
I mean, I don't know the probability, but you could probably, if you try hard enough, figure out the other ones. Just call Guess every what? Other. Start with 404, and then call every combination of numbers after
he
that.
He said the area code. We're getting closer. Guess what? My favorite Luda song is "Move, bitch, get out the way, get out the way."
I say that
to people on the street in the way, and I think to myself, I'm friendly. Leibowitz, motherfucker!
My favorite one is, I wanna lick, 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 lick you from your head to your toes. I wanna move to the move, to the down, to the down, to the floor with her.
That's what I say to any friendlies dessert. And by the way, their social media is psychotic. I started following them on Instagram, and they're showing people eating these sundaes with their fingers. They're crazy.
DeSantis style.
He likes, guess so.
Because he eats pudding with his fingers. Did you know that?
Oh, yes. He's so cool.
I like him a lot. I think he's fun and he's funny. And I'm excited that he's doing a show on Forever Dog. I think that's cool.
Very exciting.
It's called The Sandbox.
Did you see the video of Matt Gaetz like helping him prepare for the debate? And Matt Gaetz is wearing a Nirvana t-shirt?
Yes, I saw that. That was like clearly a Target Nirvana shirt.
Yeah, it was one of those things that you got at H&M, and it was like bad tie-dye, and
And Julie knows the bad tie-dye, because she only makes the good tie-dye.
Well, I have my style. I like this Shmiga Dune shirt a lot, but it's definitely not something I would have done myself. That's all. That's all I have to say. I also have to say that this was such a fun show, and I'm so glad you listened to it, and we are going to be back next week with another one.
Got another good one coming up next week. Look out. This is going to be good. Double
threat. Look out.
Yeah, and Brett, why don't you sing a little bit of Area Codes as we say goodbye?
I feel like it's best sung by the man himself. Best sung by the man himself, I think. I wouldn't be able to do it justice.
He doesn't want to do it. I don't blame him.
Fine.
You sure?
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.